All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleisher Show, broadcasting live from Jerusalem to the world, and you're a part of it wherever you are. And welcome to the Land of Israel Network. Today's show is not going to be such an easy one, at least the first part, and that is because I'm going to bring you sounds from the house of Hillel Yaffa Ariel, who was murdered, slaughtered by a horrific act of barbaric terrorism. And you're going to be there with me in this house that is a Shiva house, a mourning house, where all kinds of dignitaries and other people are coming in, and you're going to be there with me. And the intensity that the community of Kiryat Arba, right next to Hebron, the sister community of Hebron, deals with. And after this very day that I recorded this interview was the day after the funeral, and also on this day, there was yet another funeral for Rabbi Mark, who was Mickey Mark, who was murdered also in the southern Hebron Hills. And all this together is the effort of the terror to try to weaken us, to bring fear into our hearts, to cause us to be distant from places like Hebron, from our forefathers, from our ancestral homeland, from our connection to God through this land. And they're trying to sow fear into our hearts. We won't let them. So let's together listen to the strength of the Jewish people. And especially this show is dedicated to the strength of Jewish women, because from here on you're going to hear interviews just of Jewish women. First, we're going to be at the Shiva house. And then afterwards, we're going to hear from three young women who have dedicated their young lives to Aliyah, to helping Jews come to the land of Israel. So let's go to the Shiva house in Kiryat Arba, to the Ariel family, who saw such a horrific crime happen to their daughter, and the darkness that tries to destroy the Jewish people, and the light that comes out of the Ariel house instead. All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleisher Show. I have to speak in hushed tone right now because I'm in the house of Hillel Yaffa Ariel, who was the little girl, 13 and a half year old, just finished eighth grade, who was murdered viciously by a terrorist, a young terrorist, 17 year old, who jumped over the fence here in Kiryat Arba, jumped through a window into her house, and then slaughtered her with tens of knife slashes. Even turned her over and stabbed her again just to make sure that she was finished. Her adopted father walked into the house when he realized what was going on, and when he was alerted to the fact that there was a terrorist in the area, and he was the first to see his adopted daughter in such a state. Right now we're in the house. It's the Shiva house. And there's a lot of people here. There are Knesset members streaming through, important people. The president of Israel is coming in a few minutes. The prime minister has been here. There are rabbis. There are neighbors. There are friends. The scene is a little bit mad. And the bedroom where this took place is being colored right now by children. And there's heated conversations about, should we be here? Should we not be here? How do we fight these bad guys? And of course, the mother, Rina, a very vociferous and kind of dramatic person who's just not holding it inside, but letting it all out and telling us. The worst thing I heard her say just now was that she is being comforted by others right now. When she gets out of this Shiva, she's going to have to go to other Shivas to comfort other people who have already been murdered since the murder of her daughter. I'm standing here with a friend, a person who's an expert in security, security of the Jewish people, especially in these parts. His name is Mark Provisor. He's the director of security projects at One Israel Fund. And he's here to do two things. One is to be Menachem Avel, to console, but also to make sure that he doesn't have to console again, because he's here already scouting the area and making sure that it's safe. And in some sense, taking the place of what hasn't been done till now, or what's not being done, which is making sure that this place is secure. But even he will probably admit that this is not going far enough. Mark, we're in a corner in this Shiva house right now, at the Ariel house in Kiryat Arba. The nerves are frayed. We're on the edge here.
That's for sure. Look, you know, the challenges that we've always been facing are beyond beyond conception, and we have to see how we're going to continue and not be broken, as you said, number one, but how we're going to increase the security here, how we're going to be able to fill the gaps, and not just make sure that this doesn't happen again, but also send a message to those that do not want us here, that we are here to stay, and never again, never again.
And that also never again is not just an emotional state, it's also a physical state, the ability to defend oneself. Certainly, whenever I ask you about security, you always look up to God and say, you know, he's really in charge of security. But still, part of Zionism and part of the modern state of Israel is the return to our ability to defend ourselves and the ability to strike fear into the heart of our enemy in a physical sense as well. What are you going to be doing here to check out to make sure that this kind of thing doesn't happen again?
I'm going to be doing what I always do here and all the other places in Yudan, Shomron. I'm going to be looking for the gaps, see where we can fill in. This should be said that the IDF, the Ministry of Defense, do plan on doing whatever they can do, but we're going to work first. We're going to work first, and I'm going to be going over the assessments with the security chiefs, with the medical chiefs, and so on. And we're just going to look what lessons we've learned, and we at One Israel Fund are going to fill those gaps. It's not a thing of saying if or whatever. We are going to do it. We are going to do it now. And fine, when the IDF comes in, okay, kol yivorach, everything will be blessed, every effort. But we're going to make sure there's a difference already by this evening. I promise that.
The differences and the measures that you can take are oftentimes defensive. We can't go into it, but the real problem is, and here now I want you to shift hats away from your job at One Israel Fund, what you do around Judea and Samaria, all over different communities. But we both know that there is a growing Nazism that is happening right next door. One of the things that I've said in some interviews is that even this horrific, monstrous young murderer was himself a victim of a propaganda that he grew up with from inception. A hate, a bloodlust, a horrific supremacism over the Jewish people and our rights. That is growing in our midst right now. A horrible jihad. What are we going to do about that?
Well, first of all, it's not just now. This is something that's been taking place really since Oslo. In fact, one of the first things that the conditions what they stopped the incitement. The incitement's not stopping. It's growing. And until we start doing that, nothing's going to happen. And you're right, this kid was not just a victim of that, but he's a victim of child abuse. He's been trained to do this. He's been trained to die, basically. This is what they're being told. I wouldn't even call it Nazism, really. Why put a German label on it? This is Islamism, and I am not an Islamophobe. But this is what these kids are being taught and everything via Facebook and having their facts distorted. No one's doing anything. Where is the world coming out against this hatred? The world is not there. We are here alone. That's it. The Jewish people have always been alone. And that's why it's up to us to stand up strong, and let them know this will not go on. And I implore the government to stop sitting, as you know what I would say, and get moving and start being proactive more than what they've been.
Mark Provisor, Director of Security Projects at One Israel Fund, thank you so much for being with me at this very, very edgy moment in this house. And you can hear the conversations to the side. There's yellings, there's anger. There's almost no, we don't even know where to turn our emotions.
But there's strength, and that's what has to be said. The one thing that you come into this house, and obviously there's anger, there's sorrow, there is incredible, incredible strength, and this is what our people are. We are not the victims. We have victims, but we are strength, and that's what people have to see. Every Shiva house I've been to from an attack, that is what I've seen, is incredible, incredible strength. The Arabs don't understand. You want to hit us, we're just going to go stronger. That's the way it is.
All right, folks, Yishai Fleischer Show. I'm here at the Ariel house, the Shiva house, of a little girl, a beautiful little girl, whose name was beautiful. Her name was Hallel, which means praise. Yaffa is beautiful, and Ariel is the name of the Temple Mount, is the name of Jerusalem. It's the name of the strength of Israel. And instead, this little girl was murdered in her house, in this house that I'm standing in right now. As I look out right now from the house, from the back porch, I see the beautiful rolling hills of the Hebron region, the Hebron Mountains, and I see grapevines that were actually grown by her stepfather, by her adopted father, excuse me. And what a beautiful place, what a peaceful place. And yet right now it's surrounded by soldiers. We're waiting for the president of Israel to come and be part of this Shiva, this consolation. And I have the unpleasant privilege of speaking to a nice lady who seems like a regular bubby, a regular Safta. And she is the grandmother of Hallel, the mother of Rina and other, I think, four sisters and one brother. And Safta, how are you? I wish we could meet at different times. What is this all about?
This is all about that a 17-year-old murderer came through the window while my granddaughter was sleeping in bed in the morning around 9 o'clock and slaughtered her in bed, stabbed her so many times that her room looked like a slaughterhouse. And he came into the house She was sleeping after performing the night before in a dance group that she was part of, that she was so happy to participate in, and she was sleeping after the dance group. And he came in and he literally slaughtered her in the house, and he went all around the house looking for other people. Luckily, no one else was in the house. And there was a warning that somebody had come into the area here. So the rapid response group came, and my son-in-law, who's part of it, broke in, and they found Halel stabbed to death, but the terrorist was still in the house. He was walking around looking for other people, and then he hid when he heard them. And when they came in and my son-in-law screamed because he saw Halel, he came out of the room and he tried to stab them, and luckily someone was behind him and shot him. But it's a horrible, terrible thing that a 17-year-old murderer, who's worse than an animal, can come into a girl's bedroom, 13 and a half year old, and murder her in her bed. What is there to say? Nothing more to say.
Well, some people would say, you know, maybe we shouldn't be here. And some people would say that we're the bad guys. And some people would say that we have to put up bigger walls. There's all kinds of things that people say. You know, there's a lot of anger. There's a lot of emotion here. And this is not a tragedy. It's a crime. It's a horrific crime. How are we supposed to? One of the questions that's happening here, all over, you know, recurrently in this shiva house, is what now? How do we deal with this? And what is our response? And how are we supposed to deal with this pain?
Look, I know that there's been a lot of people visiting members of parliament and the prime minister and all kinds of other people that visited, people with authority. And every time something like this happens, nothing is done. They come in and they express their condolences and then they go out and nothing happens. And the same day that the funeral was held, another man, a father of 10 children, was murdered on the way home with his family. Nothing is done. If the government doesn't decide to do something drastic to stop this slaughtering, because it was a slaughter, it wasn't a murder, it wasn't a break-in to steal something. This boy came in viciously stabbing her more than 8 times in her beautiful body, and she was a gorgeous little talented girl who was just starting life. She was just accepted into high school, and she was... There's no words to say. There's no condolences that anybody can really say that's going to make a difference.
You've raised very strong children. Your daughter Rina has been, instead of being kind of withdrawn or somehow seemingly broken, she has expressed a tremendous amount of strength and broadcasted very loudly from the funeral itself to the shiva house. And I've heard her even today. And I know your other daughters as well. Tell me a little bit about how you raise these people in such a way that they are willing to not only live on certain edges, but also promote and be the strongest kind of Zionists and lovers of Israel that I know.
Look, the girls were raised in a Orthodox Zionist house. We came to Israel in 1970. I came with 2 little children. Rina was the oldest. They went through the religious Zionist education here in Israel, elementary, Ulpana. They went to Bar Ilan. They did national service in various places. They got BAs, they got MAs. They're all educated. They all have very large families. I have 24 grandchildren, and they're all raised in this atmosphere that you contributed to community, you contributed to society, and that's what they all do. How it happened, it's them. It's not me, it's them.
And as you're sitting here today on the edge of this house, on the balcony, overlooking these fields, these beautiful fields, is there a sense of, what's your sense inside? I don't want to put words into your mouth. Is there any kind of despair, anger, any doubt, or are we, you know, same strong and stronger from what just happened?
There's no doubt that I'm living in Israel by choice. I'm here 46 years. My family was raised here. It's not a matter of doubt. It's a matter that something has to be done to stop the slaughtering. This has been going on for years, but recently it's become worse, where children, Arab murderers, come and stab people in the street. That means they're being raised to be martyrs. The mother of the boy who stabbed my granddaughter went on television to praise her son. What a great guy he was, because he managed to murder my little granddaughter, and now he's going to heaven. So what can you say? Something has to be done. Their culture is a culture of death. Our culture is a culture of life. Now is Ramadan, their holy month. They should be praying. They should be asking for forgiveness for whatever. And instead, this is the time when they go out and murder. How can a 17-year-old boy be raised in a house where he can sneak into a girl's room with a knife and stab her all over, that there wasn't a part of her body that wasn't stabbed? Now, by the time she came to Shari Tzedek Hospital, there was nothing for the doctors to do. So there's nothing to say. Something has to be done. First of all, to change their education. It can't be a little child from age 3 is being educated that murder is his goal in life, that to murder a 13-year-old girl makes him a martyr, that he's going to go to paradise. Something has to be changed in their whole way, and it won't be, because that's how they're brought up. I don't have answers, but we have a government, and the government rules, and the government should think of a way to contain this. It just can't go on that a father of 10 is murdered, that a little girl 13 is murdered, that the Fogel family was murdered a few years ago where they slaughtered the parents and a baby in his crib and nothing happened. So I don't have solutions, but the government should be doing something.
Last question. What about our brothers and sisters in America and places far away from the land of Israel? You chose in 1970 to make Aliyah, to make your life here. You don't look that different than any grandma in Brooklyn. Tell me what your message is, maybe for American Jewry or Jews outside of the land of Israel.
Look, everybody has to make their own cheshbon, as they say. But from what I see, what's going on in the world today, the only way to raise Jewish children is to be in Israel. You can't be in France, you can't be in England, you can't be in any of these countries today, because there's anti-Semitism and their children are brought up with fear. My children, my grandchildren aren't afraid here, even though terrible things happen. This is their country, and this is the way you can raise children that are healthy. My grandchildren are healthy children here. They play, they go to school, they ride their bicycles, they do everything that children are supposed to do. And that's my message. If people can do it, they can come to live in Israel. It might be in beginning financially difficult, but money isn't everything. The future of your children is here in Israel.
Powerful words set at the Shiva of young Hillel Yaffa Ariel, who was murdered right in this house as we're standing here right now and surrounded right now by Israeli soldiers. The president of Israel is coming. And at the same time, as I'm talking about the soldiers and all that, I see a group of young girls, your same grandchildren, jumping right now in a big trampoline and just living their life in joy and in normalcy in the hills of Judea. Safta, what's your name exactly?
My name is Penina Aronoff.
Penina, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
All right, folks, I'm still at the Shiva house of Hillel Yaffa Ariel, and I'm right in the thick of this Shiva house, and the intensity that's here is so palpable because, again, the giant questions of our time are being asked here. Should Jews live here? Do they have a right to live here? Are they stirring up trouble? What is Islam? Or is this Islam? Or is this jihadism? Or is this an individual who did this? What is the responsibility of the government? How much power should they should they act stronger? What about international pressures? It's all right now here in this house right now. The horrific murder of this little girl. And as we're sitting here, just out the window, you could see the beautiful rolling hills of Hebron, the Hebron Hills. It's in some sense the most natural and organic place of the Jewish people to be at. And yet in this house, nothing is natural. Everything is upside down. And yet, on another turn, it is all natural. Somehow the Jewish people have come to this house to give strength to somebody who has had loss. We all feel it. All kinds of other mothers who have gone through similar situations have come here. Knesset members have shown tears. The Prime Minister was here. There's something so organic also about how this pain is being suffered. I'm here with Yael, who is one of Rina's sisters, one of four sisters. And as we heard before, there's something about this group, this family, very strong, especially the women of the family. And also Yael and your sister, Sipora, who lives next to me on the Mount of Olives, you folks are very involved also in the issue of the Temple Mount and the rights of Jews on the Temple Mount, which dovetails exactly with this issue here, with this horrific murder. Our rights, our Jewish rights, our rights to our ancestral homeland, our right to live and pray and to grow in this land, in a horrific anti-Jewish ideology which doesn't want us to pray on the Temple Mount and doesn't want us to come to Hebron and changes the name of the Temple Mount to something else and changes the name of the Tomb of the Patriarchs and Matriarchs to the Ibrahimi Mosque, which we're not really supposed to go in under their tutelage, and UNESCO and international bodies that support these ideas. Yael, at the funeral, there was a lot of talk about the Temple Mount. Uri Ariel talked about it, and other people talked about it. What is, if we step back right now from the actual physical murder of this little girl, what is this? What is the issue all about in this house right now, and that the Knesset members and the president of Israel is coming in a minute, is really discussing?
If we talk about Halel, she was very part of all this organization that's called Women for the Holy Temple, Nashim Leman Beit HaMikdash. She used to go up to the Temple Mount. She was part of all this Geula, coming up, going up to Har HaBayit. She used to go up from when she's a baby. I think we're all part of it. We all want a better, peaceful life. We all think there's something going around here that has to have another step in the Geula. I mean, all of us are living in the country, building our homes, building our fields, building up big homes and houses, and we feel there's another step, and we're some kind of a sleepness, and we don't know. Someone has to come and awaken us up. When we go in Har HaBayit, we feel this. We feel the voice that's telling us to get up. We feel this voice that tells up. When I go wake up my children, there's some kids that I have to waken up and tell them, and I tell them nicely, and they get up. And some kids, I just have to, you know, something to do much stronger in order for them to wake up. I feel what happened now with Halel is something very strong. Something that's, we're in a sleep and it has to tell us to get up, to do something, to build the Holy Temple. That's the next level. The murder came out from the voices of the Holy Temple. For what he heard of the Ramadan, for what he's hearing from his kindergarten, what my sister's mentioning, what he's hearing from his teachers, these are the voices where he came out. He didn't come out from the blue moon. He didn't come out as any murder or looking for something in the house. He came from a specific aim just to murder in a religious thing. I think that we have to awaken ourselves, and my sister mentioned it, and we're mentioning that the land over here, we have to recognize this is our land. This is our place. The Temple Mount is our land. This is the best land. Ha'aretz ha'tova me'od me'od. Also the holy place, and also the where we all live in this Jewish place, in the Jewish country, every place we go.
And yet, and I hear your sister being very loud and really using the death of her daughter as a kind of platform to get this message out, so that there will be that shock that you're talking about, like wake up somehow. And yet when you talk to people, you get a sense, like your mom, that there's a cynicism that it's probably not going to happen because it's happened before. These kind of horrific murders happened before. And one understands that maybe the government isn't going to lead that revolution, and it's somehow they're kind of a slow, even heavy thing that we have to carry forward. It's almost like we have to carry our government. Our government is not carrying us to some extent. That's certainly true about the Temple Mount.
Look, I'm a kindergarten teacher, and I believe in education. And I think, especially as women, we have a lot to educate. These things have to be said. How long will it take? How long things will be awakened by people? How long people will recognize this thing? I don't know. I don't know what's also God's step and how things will be led in Geula. But in order for people to get also the Holy Temple, they have to prepare their hearts in order to get it. They have to feel it. And I think when we're going through this place, people are feeling things. People are coming over here from all over the country. Say, I felt so strong what you're saying. People are starting to feel something in their hearts. It's so important. It's so hard to say it, that Halel is the victim. Halel is the innocent victim for this thing. But this is what happened. And I think just to go and another day and to let the things go pass away and not to just to say, oh, go, she was a wonderful girl and that's it. We have to shaken the country. We have to shaken the government, our leaders, to say, listen, Halel was here 7 years in Hebron. David was 7 years in Hebron, Melucha. Yonatan Netanyahu, the prime minister, you have now the part of it in order for you to do something from here, from Hebron, for all the country. And it's not for any, you know, reason that it's starting from here. It's starting from very strong from here, because this is a very strong place. And some will make it are more awakened, and some will are very slowly. It takes them more time, and it's okay. This is how people work. It's okay. Hopefully the people awaken, it'll take it much quicker.
Yeah, I just want to point out that you made one tiny mistake. You said that our prime minister is Yonatan Netanyahu. That and the reason you said that is because we're almost exactly tonight, in just a few hours, it'll be exactly 40 years since the Air France plane was taken to Entebbe. And that moment, that rescue operation is this pinnacle of Jewish heroism. And I think that it wasn't such a mistake, but it was really a kind of call saying, and my wife came up with a hashtag that's like, what would Yoni do? What would Yoni have done at this moment? And it's not only rescuing Jews and defending Jews now. It's what you're talking about, taking it to a different gear, taking it to a different level, and embracing what's ours, and this is the Jewish people. We're sitting at a Shiva house of an awful murder, and we're talking about the building of the temple. Yael, thanks so much. We should see each other b'smachot at the Temple Mount.
Thank you very much.
All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleisher Show. Some hard radio there, some hard sounds from a hard moment, but also with people who are also hard in the positive sense, which is that they're able to overcome this in some incredible way. And I came out of this house shocked, dismayed, and yet somehow strengthened, and I hope you do as well. You are listening to the Yishai Fleisher Show, broadcasting on thelandofisrael.com. Special thanks to Ben Bresky for helping the show happen, and my man Moshe out of Idaho, Moshe the Idahoan, who makes so much good things happen for a show, gets it out to you, so thank you very much. Write me an email, yishai@thelandofisrael.com. Connect with me on Twitter, on Facebook. You can connect to me even on LinkedIn if you wish, at Yishai Fleisher. And of course, check out our website, thelandofisrael.com, and the Hebron website, hebron.com. Now let's hear from three amazing ladies who have dedicated their lives, just like the ladies in the last half of the show have dedicated their lives to the rights of the Jewish people on the Temple Mount or coming home to the land of Israel. Listen to the next generation, young ladies, who have decided that we've got to help somehow the land of Israel, the people who want to make the land of Israel make it. We want to be that lifeboat, help them up, help them make it happen. Before we go to that part, I also want to thank the good people who make this show happen in terms of supporting it. And I want to thank Jack and Lillian and Sarah, who are actually here in Israel right now on an amazing bar mitzvah tour. I want to thank you so much for your help to make this show happen. And I also want to thank my good friends, the Michels, who support the show and also support the efforts of the Jewish people in the land of Israel. Thank you so much, and thank you so much for being part of my life. And also, these are the waning moments of my birthday, and I want to thank and bless everybody who listens to the show and who has made this radio that I make for you important to you, and my good friend Tammy out in Singapore and other people, my good friend Eric, my good friend Andy, all folks all around the world who make me feel like this effort that I try to make for you means something and has an impact on your life. I want to thank you very much. I also want to thank Ari and Jeremy of thelandofisrael.com for hosting this show and also for being my friends. So God bless all of you for being part of a great story, and thank you for being part of my life. It's an honor. Now let's hear from amazing young people who are changing the world because they actually have dedicated their life not just to make money or I don't know what, but they're really out there to give a helping hand, especially to the great honor, privilege, mitzvah, and a unique moment of our time, and that is Aliyah, coming home to the land of Israel. All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleisher Show. I'm here in Jerusalem broadcasting live to the world, and you're a part of it wherever you are. I'm at the
towards a new law of war conference. This is the Shurat Adin organization, which sues the pants off of places like Iran. Bad folks all over the world seizes their assets. They really kick the assets of the bad guys. And I have a lot of respect for what they do. And we've heard a lot of interesting lectures and talks and panels about such challenging issues as the narrative warfare, incitement on Facebook, how do we shut it down? We've also heard an interesting lecture, actually a panel about Judea and Samaria, how is this land or this territory different than all other territories, a cute title. We've heard a lot of interesting things. And one of the reasons that I come out to conferences like this, other than I act like I'm working for the day, but instead I get to enjoy fantastic speakers and understand the issues that are around us, is actually to meet people. That's what conferencing is really about. You meet a lot of good people. And one of the things that I noticed at this conference was, as usual at conferences, there's a lot of folks who are a bit older, and that's great because they have, you know, time, they care about these issues, they have a lot of experience and depth in these issues. But sometimes I wonder, where's the young people? They're the ones who actually need to understand this the most. And at this conference, there are a bunch of young people, and some of them actually came up to me, and they came to talk about the conference a little bit, but then they started telling me about what they do. And I was amazed to bump into three amazing young ladies who are involved in maybe one of the greatest issues of our time, which is the return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel. And returning to the land of Israel is not just a theory. It's not just an emotional thing. It's not just prophecy and Bible and religion. It's also about the nuts and bolts, making it really happen. And kind of reminds me a little bit about, do you remember that movie Titanic? You know, the folks are kind of swimming in the frozen water at the end there, and somebody's like bailing them out, pulling them onto the life raft, right? I don't mean to be, to in any way scare you. Israel is not a frozen northern Atlantic. What I really mean to say is that there's a beauty also in helping your brother and sister who is in the Atlantic, across the Atlantic, get into the lifeboat, get into Israel. Now, how are you going to do that? You're going to help them, sure, emotionally. You're going to make maybe a radio show that gets you information and thoughts. But these three young ladies have created organizations and companies that are actually helping the next generation make it here in Israel, tactically, on the ground. Sure, they're filled with that motivation. Maybe they've been to Birthright. Maybe they've heard a talk by Nefesh B'Nefesh or something. But what about making it on the ground? And these three ladies are doing two very different things, but they're connected. One is an organization called Here Next Year, which is founded by Bracha and Pnina Lam. And basically, it's for folks who are here for the year, in the gap year, either in yeshiva or in a seminary or in the colleges. They're here in the gap year program, and they need a leg up. They need a helping hand to get into the IDF or Shirut Lumi, which is national service, or universities. They basically need understanding. I get the question all the time. I get questions all the time. Well, how do I go to the army? Well, how do I get into the university? I get that question all the time, and I kind of fudge it and say, well, you know, it's out there on the internet. Bar Ilan's got this and that. Now there's going to be an address for you, and that's here next year. And we're going to talk about that. And then Yael Birnbaum, she has started a company, which is called Worky, which helps former IDF soldiers, ones that were lone soldiers, just like herself, when they are discharged from the army, find a job. So she's a headhunter or, job coach, whatever you want to call it, for folks who have finished the army. That's really important because their parents are going to say, you're not going to get a job. How could you move to Israel and go to the army? You're going to throw away 4 years of your time, 3 years of your time. You're not going to get a job. You're going to be poor. I'm not God here to support you forever. You're going to get a lot of these kind of messages. So these two companies of young women, one is an organization, one's a company, is an amazing thing. And I got a chance to talk with them here at the Shurat Adin conference. So let's start with Bracha and Pnina. Ladies, how are you? Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Yishai. Thanks for taking time to notice the young people in the crowd. I just want to tell you a little bit of the backgrounds of really how we started this organization Here Next Year. The two of us, my sister and I, Pnina and I, we are from New York originally, and we come from a loving Zionistic home. We really were brought up with these ideals of Zionism and a love of Israel and a love of returning to the land and the Jewish people. And we went through elementary school, middle school, Zionist camps, high school, and we decided to do this gap year in Israel like so many of our peers before we went back to America for college. And when we were here, we really fell in love with the land and decided we need to stay and we need to give to the Jewish people in Israel. We need to stay and serve the country. So we both decided to do Shirut Lumi, to do national service. And we both chose to do national service in foster homes with children who were taken out of their homes because of abuse. And so we decided we're going to stay. And then we looked around and said, okay, so how do we stay?
Let me pause you for just 1 second, Bracha.
Sure.
I just want to explain. In Israel, there's the IDF. You could serve in the army, and then you could serve in an alternative system called the National Service, which is 1 or 2 years, where you get to do all kinds of good gal work in this case, throughout the country. And this is just an example of that, working with foster homes, kids have been taken out of their families because of abuse.
Exactly. So there are Shirut Lumi options in pretty much any good work you could do in Israel with the elderly, children, people with disabilities. So we chose to do our Shirut Lumi, our national service in foster homes. So we looked around and we said, okay, well now how do we do it? And we had absolutely no idea. We had no friends who were staying. We didn't really know people who stayed. We didn't understand the bureaucracy, the culture, the Hebrew. We really weren't prepared for it at all. And it really was very overwhelming. And for a lot of our friends, it was a deterrent. And they said, you know what, we're not dealing with this. We want to stay, but it's too complicated. We're going back home.
The deterrent is not fear, and it's not anything else but just the confusion of bureaucracy and getting into that program.
So a lot of times it's really the bureaucracy, and also just a lack of community and support, a lack of friends who are staying. A lot of our friends are going back to America. Our families are in America or in whatever country we come from. So we both stayed to do Shirut Lumi after a complicated process of figuring out how to do it. It was an unbelievable year, challenging, meaningful, difficult, but really the best years of our lives.
But both at the same time?
So my sister did it a few years before me. She's 3 years older than me, so she did it 3 years before me. And then when we stayed, we finished Shirut Lumi, and we said, you know, we love this land. We love our children that we worked with. We want to make Aliyah and make our lives here and make a difference here. So we both made Aliyah, and then we chose to go to study college in Bar-Ilan University. And we got there and we realized that there are so many people like us. There are so many people who came from English speaking countries, came for their gap year to study, and then realized that they wanted to make Aliyah and stay in Israel. And we kind of looked around and saw these hundreds of people who have stayed and said, why aren't these people connected before they're making this decision to stay? Why don't they know that there's going to be this support system for them, these friends for them? And why is there no help with the bureaucracy before they make Aliyah? So that's really where Here Next Year was born. Panina can tell you a little bit more about what we do.
All right, so pass the mic to your sister, Panina. Panina, three years older. You're married, I'm guessing, from the headgear and stuff like that. So you went through this process of Shirut Lumi, National Service, then Bar-Ilan, which are really certain pathways to kind of normative life in Israel. Now, Bar-Ilan is very famous for its program, for its English-speaking program. I know a lot of people who have made their Aliyah through the Bar-Ilan University. Today, there's other universities as well. But you guys, the both of you, have identified that people have a hard time knowing about those organizations, knowing about those pathways, and also knowing about each other, knowing about one another as people who potentially share that same pathway, or want to share that same pathway and want to share those challenges as well.
Exactly. So Here Next Year really addresses all the things that you just said. What's amazing about this country is that there are so many organizations out there that help different parts of the population that we deal with. There are organizations that help Olim. There are organizations that help soldiers. There are organizations that help Benot Shirut, and we're excited here to meet Yael, who works with soldiers. We can't wait to partner with her. What we love about what we do is that we get to bring all of those organizations to one place in order to make it accessible, make the information accessible to all these students who are interested in staying. So by bringing...
Not just the information, though, you probably also give a tad of guidance and a tad of experience into that as well. I mean, I just want to pause for a second. You know, today in media, some of the most successful media outlets are actually conglomerators, like the Huffington Post. What you're saying is there's a lot of information out there, and you could kind of, you know, try to figure it out. When it comes together in one place and you feel safe, you can trust that place, you know it has experience, so you go to herenextyear.com and you're like, boom, you're kind of plugged into all the various things, and then from there the spectrum splits off and you're going to find your pathway.
Exactly. So So that's one of the things we do. And the other thing to that point is that we have 100 volunteers that volunteer with us, and they bring with them the experience of being in these gap year students' shoes just a few years before. So there's personal guidance, there's guidance from people who are just as passionate as these students and have made the same decisions that these students are making. So that's the informational side is one side, and then the other side is the community side, the feeling, as Bracha was saying before, of having people who you know will have your back, who are going to be your family, who you know are choosing the same life path as you. Which is really powerful. And we see that, you know, we send out surveys all the time. And one of the biggest obstacles for people staying in Israel is the fact that they don't have a support system here.
Pause for a second. Surveys, you send out a lot of surveys. Tell me a little bit about that.
We do. Actually, after every event that we do, we send out surveys to determine how effective our programming has been and to determine what the obstacles are, what the deterring factors are for people staying in Israel, what kinds of information they want. And that's kind of a way to gauge from our population what's needed.
That's a very modern way of thinking. You have to kind of check where people are at all the time, and people have the ability to give you that information back, that feedback, and you're not just kind of sitting on, not going to, you know, again, in terms of media, we're not broadcasting one directionally these days. We're constantly getting feedback or ideas from whoever is out there listening and connecting.
Exactly. So it's very much a grassroots listening and responding to what's happening on the ground.
And getting probably new information as well, right?
Exactly. Getting new information all the time and being in touch with all the different organizations. And the most amazing thing, I think, is that, as Bracha was mentioning before, there are a lot of people who decide that they don't want to stay because they're scared about the information. They're scared about not having their family here. So actually just last week, somebody called me and said, you know, I'm in Harova for the year. And
that's a girl's seminary.
It's a girl's seminary in Jerusalem. And she said, my friends have gone through your programming. And the whole entire year, I knew I was a Zionist. I went to, you know, one of the Zionist camps and I knew I wanted to stay. But the whole year, I just said to myself, it's just not going to happen for me. I can't do it. I just can't do it. And after hearing about all these different girls who are doing national service or going to the army or going to university here, she finally decided that she could do it. So, you know, we're kind of seeing that proof is in the pudding, that when people see their peers doing something, they want to do it too. And when you make staying in Israel cool and fun and exciting and a true expression of your passion, then it makes it more attractive for people. So it's just exciting to see.
I call that encouraging courage. You're encouraging courage. You're giving people the courage. Yesterday I was at the dentist's for my little girl, my 8-year-old girl. And she was afraid of the needle, blah, 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 whatever, to get the what's it called? Sedative, the Novocaine, whatever they use today. And the doctor said to her, he's like, look, I have a kid, and she knows that the doctor is actually our neighbor. She says, you know, my child wasn't afraid, and you shouldn't be afraid either. And she told me later, she's like, when he told me that, I was like, yeah, you know, I'm not afraid. I shouldn't be afraid either. I just mean to say we encourage courage. We tell each other we can do it. I'm doing it. And we give each other courage when we're doing it together. And you mentioned also the kind of building of the, and I guess around the same point, you're building a kind of social network. And I don't mean a virtual social network, like actual social network. Remember, by the way, that social networks are not just virtual. They're actually real people connecting. It's just a different way of conversing. It's important. Sometimes people forget that. People say, when are, you know, they kind of diss it. My wife has a lot of friends on social media that are real friends because that's where she met them. In any case, when you have a society that encourages you, that gives you a sense that you're not alone in this journey. And let's remember that we're talking about being alone because we're talking about people who often are leaving their families, leaving them back in North America or England or whatever. We're talking about people who are taking a walk, if to continue the metaphor from before, off the plank and into the water by themselves, and to get a sense that, no, down below there is not the frigid waters of the Atlantic, but rather somebody's going to pick you up in that life raft that gives people a very different feeling. So we're going to get right back to you. The website here is Here Next Year. Am I right about that?
Here Next Year Israel.
HereNextYearIsrael.com. Okay, fix me. There you go. HereNextYearIsrael.com. I have to memorize it anyway because I'm going to have to give it out to people all the time. It's a great card,
please,
by the way. Here Next Year Israel. Of course I'm going to give it out because I want to help them. I want to help them come home. I want to help them make it. Go ahead.
Another great thing you were talking about, you know, surveys and how to kind of modernize really this whole process of helping people. Another one of our big focuses is our website, so that, you know, we're not only helping the people who are here in their gap year now, but if I'm in ninth grade and I'm thinking about staying after my gap year in 4 years. So I can check the website. I see a step-by-step process of how to be involved. I see stories by people who are just a few years older than I am.
Stories of people that have made it.
My high school, from my hometown.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so when I was in the Army, I was a lone soldier. And at that time, lone soldier meant to be alone, okay? It was the kind of thing that it was, lone soldier at the time was a legal definition. Meaning to say, the Army would be like, they would classify you as a lone soldier. It didn't mean a big, like, organization that's going to be behind you, or various organizations. It didn't mean a lot of fun barbecues on Yom HaTzmaut. It didn't mean what it means today. It didn't mean a lot of honor back in your high school. It meant being like, whoa, you know, for my mom, it meant people being like, your son is where? He's put his life on the line from the IDF. And lone soldier meant lone back then. It wasn't, it just didn't have the status it has today. Also, it also meant being alone because there wasn't a lot of lone soldiers. There was just not a lot. Folks, this is 20 years ago, okay? There was not a lot of lone soldiers in whatever it was. When we would meet each other, we'd be like, wow. Like, you know, today, when I work in Hebron, I'm meeting soldiers all the time. There's always a lone soldier, always. And oftentimes an Anglo lone soldier. There's other lone soldier categories, by the way, people who are of broken homes and different things. There's different other categories, but what we're talking about here is Anglo, English speaking.
Not only.
Okay. All right. So there you go.
I will get into that.
Yael, help me understand what you're doing. You got a person who's a lone soldier. They're coming out of that experience, and they want to make it here in Israel. They don't have that same pillar behind them. Their families. They don't have that same Israeli experience full on from like childhood. You've created a company in this case called Worky, which reminds me of like Prezi. Somebody just told me about a presentation system called Prezi. I want to hear about that.
All the names with Y now. That's where it's at.
That's where it's at. Okay, Yael Birnbaum, you've created Worky in order to help former IDF lone soldiers find jobs in Israel. Help me understand what's the need there.
That's precise. So my company is called Worky, Werky. It's a brand new thing. Just started this 4 months ago, relatively. As to what you were just saying, we have grown, and it's really great to see that IDF lone soldiers today, with respect to your service and your time, there's much more going on. There's much more help. So I'm really proud of that fact personally. There is a lot more financial support during the service, in terms of also living and accommodations. They really do, the IDF does a great job right now with lone soldiers. Precisely what I do is the post-army follow-up, I like to call. And
this is a debate here in Israel about regular soldiers as well. Do they find a pathway into the marketplace? And there's like courses and organizations that deal with trying to help a person get out of a male or female, get out of their uniform and into civilian life. Just a little tad of a parenthesis. It's not easy to get out of uniform and enter civilian life. Right. There's a mental shift that has to go on there. I personally, one of the toughest mental times of my whole entire life was leaving the Army. It was very hard for me to give back my weapon. It was very hard for me to give back my fatigues. And that's because as a Jew and as an Israeli, I felt total a satisfaction religiously, emotionally, and also as a defender of Israel, when I was in the IDF, and I also had respect. People honored you like a paratrooper. Wow, great! The minute I was out, I was just a regular schmo on the bus, and that was definitely a tough thing.
Yeah. So as to that point, actually, our vision, Werky's vision, is to establish, sustain, and integrate former IDF lone soldiers into Israeli society. So this is something that people are kind of conflicted with. All of a sudden, getting into civilian life, it's not easy. A lot of these lone soldiers have the sudden burden, a financial burden of taking care of themselves, essentially. Now, I do want to get into the types of populations, because as you were saying before, Yishai, there are different lone soldier sects. There are the Israelis, about 50% are actually Israelis, native born. And they come from very tough backgrounds. They are not supported financially by their families. They are not even supported, period, by their families. A lot of them come from very ultra-Orthodox backgrounds, and their families don't necessarily support them joining the IDF. And you have a range of different people. Then I want to get into the Olim. Like you said, there's also the Anglo.
Right. Just to give people a sense of that, we're talking about, you're right. You know, I didn't realize what you were talking about. Like, I was talking about North American or other Anglo people, young people leaving their families, but generally they have their families at least respect. What you're talking about with the ultra Orthodox are people who have chosen to go into the IDF, oftentimes against the philosophy of their families and of their neighborhoods, and really of the society that they come from, and they get cut off. That's a horrible thing.
Right. So this is a very diverse crowd, and I think the thing that unifies them is that they have the sudden financial burden, and not necessarily are they supported by their family. And I say support also in terms of financial and also in terms of, you know, mental and emotional support. So this is one of the things that they grapple with. They do need a job. One of the things that answers that need immediately is getting a job. Once you have a job, you can become that more integrated into the society. So we do also want to deal with the Olim and also the native Israelis, what have you. They are all lone soldiers in Werke's eyes, and we're here to offer them jobs.
Yael, you were an IDF infantry instructor. You were,
yes.
You taught how to shoot. You taught mostly men, maybe mm-hmm. some women as well, how to shoot a missile. A certain kind of missile. We won't get into that, you know.
Yeah.
I could tell you guys, but then I'd have to kill you. But in any case, you were part of that system of the IDF. Just quickly tell me, why did you decide to go into this? And I want to ask the three of you. I'll start with you, Yael, through Werke. You know, you could have done a lot of different things. It's obvious to me that the three of you are people that could be successful in any field that you would choose, basically. What makes you want to choose to work through a company or an organization to give this helping hand to your brothers and sisters, wherever they may come from, either ultra-Orthodox or North American kids on under a gap year? What made you, in this case, Yael, want to get into this business of helping people?
Right. So like you said, it hits home, you know, it really does. I was myself a former lone soldier. I was an infantry instructor. I was in a missile unit. And after the Army, I found it almost astounding that when I would go for interviews, people really wouldn't care so much that I came here from New York. I'm also originally from New York, Rockland County. And I came here, I served in the IDF as a lone soldier. I also came, by the way, with a degree. I studied economics at NYU. So I was very astonished to see that there wasn't such a great reaction to me in the marketplace, in the job marketplace. And I sort of thought to myself, chaval, you know, that's a shame, because a lot of people come here with this passion and this motivation, and these people are skilled and disciplined and very qualified candidates for any job, certainly. And because the issue of experience maybe was a little bit lacking, was to their their detriment. So that's where I wanted to come in and kind of provide something and make the case with all these companies, wherever, you know, with brand names, with IBM, Microsoft, Checkpoint Security, brand names, say, listen, there's a huge population here that if you don't devote time, effort, and energy, they're just going to leave if they have the ability.
Have you found that the government or other bodies, for example, Lone Soldier Center, are helpful to you, understand what you're up to, want to help you? Or do you find the companies are getting it, that you're representing, in a sense, you're really being an advocate for a whole group that indeed has these passionate, courageous attributes?
For sure. So first of all, we are working closely with the Michael Levin Lone Soldier Center. They're a great organization, one of the best that is dealing with the lone soldier community, offering them meals, events. They have barbecues for Independence Day, all sorts of really great things. And like Bracha and Panina were saying, there's a ton of organizations that deal with this population, with the lone soldier population. There isn't per se one thing that does job placement. So here I am, as per the government and other bodies, there definitely is a sort of awareness. I mean, just last week there was a conference or a meeting in the Knesset, in the parliament in Jerusalem, where there was a specific meeting on the issue of lone soldiers leaving the army, how they can be integrated in a more holistic fashion. One of the leaders there is of course a member of Knesset, Michael Oren, who is a great someone who's super influential in this whole topic of lone soldiers. Also Itzik Shmuli was there. There are many great people, and we just need to know how to work with them, to connect with them, and get our story out there so that more and more people find us and say, hey, you sound like a great company. We want to help you out. We want to be there for you. We want lone soldiers to come work at our companies because they're skilled. They speak various languages and they're highly disciplined. They've been through challenges that most of us can't even imagine. And just to give you some background, I mean, the other day I spoke with someone who was in Sayeret Yael, which is a
engineer corps special
right.
unit.
Right, it's a special unit in the engineers. And this guy was telling me, yeah, I came with an engineering degree, I served in this elite unit, and yet I couldn't find anything that would really keep me here, whether it's in terms of school or working while in school. And he said, I preferred to go back, study my MBA at Cornell, and get, you know, all these things on my resume and start working at an international company before deciding what I'm going to do here. So I thought to myself, that's a real shame. You know, these people are super quality and I want them to stay here. I want them to really get into any kind of company, organization, and just live here because that's what we're here to do. We're all Zionists in this way or another.
Yael, how do people reach you?
So right now we are currently working on our website, which is worky.co.il. That'll be up, hopefully, God willing, in the next month. But they can certainly go to the Michael Levin Lone Soldier Center and ask for me, Yael Birnbaum. And they can also email me at yaliburn@gmail.com.
Very good. Okay, that sounds amazing. And Bracha and Panina, you guys are reachable at herenextyearisrael.com. Bracha at herenextyearisrael.com. And I guess Panina at herenextyearisrael.com. Ladies, I want to tell you something. I do a lot of interviews. Honestly, this is truly inspiring for me. I had to pull out of the conference and try to ask you gals to come out of the conference in order to talk with you here. We're like in a back room behind the conference, and I just thought to myself, this is truly inspirational. This is truly an inspirational thing. I started my Zionist, my pro-Israel work through an Aliyah organization called Kuma, and we did everything that we could at the time. You guys are taking it to way better levels. It excites me, you know, how serious you are with what you said before here next year, Israel, with just getting the surveys and getting the info and what you said about working with the government and Michael Oren. You know, it's just so exciting and so amazing to see you guys helping the next generation of Aliyah happen. And I believe it. I believe that American Jews, North American Jews, and ultra-Orthodox Jews are going to be more plugged in, more at home, and more successful. Yes, Panina, last words.
I just wanted to thank you so much for taking the time to out of the conference to speak with us and to get the word out about what we do. And we can't wait to work with Yael in the future. And yeah, thank you.
And just to see the support that we get from people who, like you, who went through this, you know, 20 years ago, and here we are, you know, treading the same path, you know, but on your shoulders. And it's really a privilege to connect with all of you here.
All right, Bracha and Panina Lam from herenextyearisrael.com and Yael Birnbaum from Worky, both a company and an organization trying to help
people make it? And of course, they could find you guys probably on Facebook, connect to you, LinkedIn, sure. But if you're through the Lone Soldier Center, you guys have your website already up. Anyway, continued success, and thank you very much for being with me here, folks. You are listening to the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting live from Jerusalem to the world. Write me an email, yishai@thelandofisrael.com, and certainly you can connect to me as well on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, all at Yishai Fleischer, and also yishaifleischer@gmail.com. God bless you, all of you out there. Stay tuned, stay strong, and stay connected, and shalom.
Rabbi Isaac Nissenbaum, one of the founders of the religious Zionist Mizrahi movement, wrote, "The objective of Mizrahi is the total revival of our nation in all its aspects, to revive Judaism in our hearts and to revive our hearts for Judaism. The Land of Israel Network is powered by the Mizrahi World Movement."
Do you like picking strawberries or blueberries in the spring and summer? What about grapes? If you were to take an experience like picking grapes and move it to the heartland of Israel, this is when an experience becomes prophetic. Young and old, singles and families are all invited on this adventure of a lifetime. I'm Joshua Waller with Hayuvel, and I invite you to join us on the mountains of Israel, where prophecy meets reality. Go to hayuvel.com, that's HAYOVEL.com, for more information.